You did, council was one of the first organizations you became active
right.
in. Describe the flavor of council then.
Well,
you
let
came
me
in.
First tell you that the way I became active in council is because at that time Mrs. Raymond Kaufman was the president, whom I knew personally, and she asked me to be the recording secretary. I had never done a job like that. I couldn't imagine myself doing it, but she said, try it. So that was my first experience in council. The board at that time was not nearly as large a board as we have today. It was made up primarily of the old families in Pittsburgh. Like, of course, the Rows, and Mrs. Enoch Rao was no longer president, but had been for many, many years.
Isn't she the one who was president for something
19 years? Or something like that. And she had left a definite imprint on the board.
Oh, sure.
Mrs. Zug Smith had been also one of the presidents. She was another old-timer. There were people like Mrs. Hugo Baum on the board. She was the chairman of the Industrial League. My mother, Mrs. Hast, was on the board. I don't know, I'd have to go over some of those old minutes to really remember. There were also some of the my age, maybe a few years later than that. I guess Ruth Helen Kaufman was on the, I don't know if she was on the board. I know she was active because Minnie was her sister-in-law. Mrs. Raymond Kaufman was her sister-in-law. Who else was on that board? I really, at this point, I'd have to go over the old minutes to remember.
Mrs. Ruslander?
I don't remember it, if she was still active. She may have been. Mrs. Leo Ruslander.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she might have been on the board.
Was it a group of more than 20?
Oh, yes, sure. There were maybe 40 or 50 on the board at that time. It wasn't as big as it is today. And the board was an entirely different kind of a board. They did a lot of work and good work, but it was, how shall I put it? It wasn't, first of all, even the young people were not nearly as intelligent about communal things, about legislative matters, about government matters. No, they were not, as they are today. I see a great difference. Of course, our board today is made up primarily of much younger people than many of them were at that time. And as a result, they, as I said, they did very good work. I remember some of the early projects. There was one that was very interesting. Mrs. Edgar Kaufman was the head of. It was called the League for the Handicapped, which eventually became the UVES. You probably knew
United
that.
United Vocational Employment
yes,
Service.
Yes, but it started out as a council committee called the League for the Handicapped. Of course, the Industrial League, you know about.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the Industrial League was formed in order to give work to primarily to the women who were refugees.
Jewish?
Jewish refugees. I think that they were almost all Jewish.
Oh, wait a minute. Refugees from where?
Well, I don't know. Or maybe I should say immigrants.
Immigrants.
Rather
immigrants.
Than refugees.
Right, right.
They were, I don't say they were all poor, but they needed the money. And so, and they were very skilled in what they did. And so as a result, this Industrial League was formed for two purposes, in order to give these people work and in order to have articles for sale which couldn't be bought anywhere else.
Oh, wait a minute. Go ahead.
What kinds of things did they make?
Right.
Lingerie. Beautiful.
Now, this was needlework.
All needlework, yes. Mm-hmm. robes, table linen, little articles, little
baby
gifts,
clothes.
Baby clothes, all that sort of thing, like the Women's Exchange. Very similar.
Now,
was the
Women's Exchange already in existence?
I think so.
So that we were really basically...
Not in competition, because it was an entirely different group of people.
I don't mean in competition, but it was not an original idea.
Don't think it was original. I think I'm right that the Women's Exchange was already in existence. I couldn't swear to it.
Now, were the women paid according to the sale of their objects?
I don't remember that.
Or did the council buy it from the women?
Oh, no. Council did not buy it. It was sold on an individual basis, their own customers, but I don't know how the women were paid. Whether they were paid by piece or by hour, I don't remember this.
And do you remember how profitable this was for
council? It was very profitable. Well, not necessarily so profitable for council. It was very profitable for the Industrial League. Now, the women were all volunteers, the women who managed it and who ran it. But I cannot recall exactly whether the Industrial League paid a certain amount each year to council, or whether it all went into the Industrial League treasury. You know that after the Industrial League closed up, that's when council got money.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question.
I don't remember.
Because I recall that the principal, the amount of money remaining was just sort of put into a bank account, was it not? And when I was president, there was a discussion of using that money to open, again, a very luxurious kind of gift store. That idea ultimately was rejected.
Yeah.
But it was to be opened with a capital, which still would be coming to us.
Yeah, I don't think council was paid much from the Industrial League during its
years.
It
wasn't an
operation.
Ongoing source of income like the thrift shop.
No, it was nothing like that.
I see.
You see, first of all, they had an expensive location. They were in the Shenley Apartments, for which naturally they had to pay good big rent.
And that's where their customers came
that's
from.
That's where they didn't just come from there, but they were in that neighborhood,
right.
And it was that bracket, that group who patronized the Industrial League. Second of all, they had to pay the women.
Uh-huh.
And thirdly, they had to buy all the materials. So there couldn't have been a great deal left to give to council.
So that the service it performed was basically a source of income for the women.
That's
who provided
to
the
provide product. To see that those women received enough compensation to keep them going, at least, or their families, and to provide a place for people, all people, our members, the council members, and many other people, to buy this kind of merchandise. You couldn't get it anywhere else. Even the Women's Exchange in those days, I don't think, had the kind of things that the Industrial League had. They had beautiful baby clothes and gift items, things of that sort, and a food shop, which the Industrial League never had.
Wait, who had the food shop?
Women's Exchange.
The Women's Exchange, yes, I remember.
And a dining room.
That's right.
But the Industrial League would never have that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, of course, there were many other activities. The council house, which I do not recall, I have only heard about. Oh, Mrs. Winehouse was on the board, because she was the one. You know about the council house?
Well, that's what ultimately became YIKC. Isn't that what you're talking about? Which council house are you talking about?
Council house was down in the, was on Van Boulevard or near there, in the East Liberty District. And it was started by Mrs. Winehouse as a home for girls.
Yes, I did know
about
that.
Working girls.
Right.
Where they had beautiful rooms, and they were well taken care of. And it was really quite a project.
It's basically what the YWCA did.
Yes.
For the girls who came in from the farms to work in the city and did not have a respectable place to live in.
Yes. Now, of course, the YWCA, I think, was more or less on a dormitory basis, wasn't it?
Well,
It wasn't comparable to being in a beautiful private home.
No, it was more institutional.
And Mrs. Winehouse furnished it and provided the funds to keep it up. Mm-hmm. It was a council project. And I imagine, see, this was even before my time. Or if it wasn't, it was in the very early years. What she did again primarily for the girls themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, whether council council must have budgeted some money for it. I really don't remember this, but she was the angel there.
Mm-hmm. And we've had some contact with some of the girls who had once lived there when we were doing the history of council for the 75th anniversary.
Oh, you did have
it seems to me that there are in the records some letters, but if you don't remember this
person, don't remember.
All right, our history carried something.
I really don't remember why it went out of existence, to tell you the truth. I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you came in, what were the primary
activities? Well, I just named two of them. Then there was the Girls Bureau. Now, that ultimately went into the Federation. And what they did must have been, again, on the nature of looking out for girls through a social worker. I can't remember too much about it, Frieda.
Was that one of the ones that went to the Federation
when
Zena Saul moved over?
No,
it
went into the Federation, Jewish
Family and Children's Service.
Mm-hmm. That was the Girls Bureau. And they did have legislative classes. And there was a great deal of hospitality, so to speak, and big program meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the conventions. What the other projects were, and the blind. We were very active in the School for the Blind.
Mrs. Russlander was one of the founders.
School for the Blind.
But actually, she seemed to have carried that over more as an individual almost than an organization.
Well, there was a committee.
It was that's right, the Committee for the Blind in Council.
That's right.
That's right.
The committee and the deaf.
Right.
We were interested. There was a committee for the deaf that worked out at the Edgewood School for the deaf.
Right.
Gradually, I'm beginning to remember, but sure.
Dorothy, I'm curious about something. When you said they weren't experienced in legislative matters as they are today. The reason I say that is that this was around the time that the Women's Suffrage Amendment was passed. And
said precisely that they weren't experienced.
But they were involved deeply in a major constitutional amendment. And council, certainly nationally, not in Pittsburgh.
Maybe even locally there.
You weren't part of that.
I don't remember that part.
All right. Well, that's
it could well be, but I don't remember.
And, you know, the child labor laws.
That was before Frieda.
That was around 1916 or so, but it had to.
Well, honey, that was before. I didn't come back to Pittsburgh till 22.
Right, but I was thinking something within a period of 6 years would have left a residue.
I can't tell you what they did before I came back.
Right, right. All right, all right.
From 25 or 6 on, I would know, but not from 16, even though I was a member of junior council before I was married, but I don't think I took too active a part in it.
Dorothy, our membership also during those years reached an all-time high in actual members.
I don't remember that. I really
don't.
No.
All right.
Okay. That it reached an all-time high in those
years? I'd have to look back at the history, but council was a major women's organization before Hadassah was formed and before ORT came along, before some of the other Jewish women's organizations.
Before Hadassah?
And we had a higher membership in some of those years than we've ever achieved since.
Yes, I think
we went up to 3,000.
Up to around 3,000.
Right, and we've and in my years
it was later than that.
Well, now, I
think it was a little later than that. I'm not sure. I remember it's going up that high, but
it seems to me one of the reasons it went down was because of the formation of some of the other groups and other sisterhoods, you know,
that
to more
well
additional
be. And there was another reason.
But I'm not fresh on it either. I just wondered what
There's
you
another reason for it's going down. A reason that I thoroughly dislike bringing up, but still feel that it's pertinent. And that is that council, the Pittsburgh section, was formed by a group of German Jews, old families and the German Jews. That's who formed council. And it shows in the minutes. And as the years went on, and these other organizations came up, who were not in that same group, many of the people in the community preferred to join those groups. Council in those days was always known as a very snobbish organization. And it's true.
You affirm that.
I affirm that. It's true. Now, we didn't think of it being snobbish for you.
I know.
This never entered our heads. But nevertheless, it was a fact. And then, of course, as the years went on, and that's why I say, one of the reasons that I say that today we have a much better board than we had then, because we have a cross-section of all different, strata of society. I don't know whether that's quite true. I may be overstating that, because I think most of our girls are more or less in the same communal level. Don't you think so?
Yes, I think the only ones we're missing are the deeply Orthodox.
Yes.
And we don't have many of those.
Well, you have a few.
Yes, we have
a few. You have a few. Well, that would never have happened on the old board of council.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think those women really, unless they made it their business to find out, even knew what Orthodox Jewry was. You think back on that board, and I think Ellie can probably project herself enough to see that I think I'm right. Now, there may have been a few. Of course, I can't remember, and I'm not bringing her in this way, but I can't remember whether Lillian Friedberg was on the board at that time or not.
She had a position. I've forgotten now whether she said vice president of program chairman or something.
That
may not have put
time.
Her on the board. I don't know.
I don't remember that.
Although it's interesting, Dorothy, because your own grandfather was an Orthodox cantor.
Yeah, but he was...
So it wasn't so far. It was two generations
away. Yeah, but look, dear, that was in England.
Yes.
And there were nothing but Orthodox Jews in England.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there aren't too many other than Orthodox, or what they call a liberal, which is really not liberal. I would say it's conservative in England today, or in any part of Europe.
Right.
Actually. Certainly not in France, certainly not in Italy, certainly not in Spain. I don't know about Germany, for those that may have gone back, they may be reformed, because the reform movement, of course, came from Germany. But this was a pretty tightly knit group. If you look at the charter members of the Pittsburgh section, you will find Mrs. Rushlander, the old lady Rosalia Rao, my grandmother.
My great-grandmother?
Yes.
Your great-grandmother was?
Fanny Hamburger.
That was the other one, the first president. I can't remember the moment. Rosenberg. Mrs. Hugo Rosenberg. That's right. That's what reminded me.
Now,
they're all one group of people.
Very close.
Very close.
Socially.
Very close socially. Very close ethnically. It was a close group. And even in my day, which after all was not before 1925 and had been in existence since 1893.
Right.
That's a long time.
Right.
It still was more or less of that nature. Not entirely. But
well, when I came into council I came in shortly in the late 1930s for a brief period on the public affairs mm-hmm. department, I found none of that. And of course, when I came back again to be active in the 1960s,
no, oh, that it was gone.
That of course it was gone completely.
You didn't find any of it in 30?
Dorothy, it wasn't 30. It was closer to 38 or 39.
Oh, that's
no, wait a
different.
Minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. It was even, it was later than that. Oh, I think it had to be maybe right after World War II.
Oh, well, yeah. Honey, World War II changed everything.
Okay. And you know, I happen to have been kind of oblivious, even if it existed, I don't think.
Well, see, I was oblivious. Frieda, I was oblivious at the time because I didn't know any different.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just put it mm-hmm. point mm-hmm. blank.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know any different. But as the years went on, and I began to meet more and more people whom I liked very, very much, and who were extremely intelligent and really gave me a great many things to think about, that's when I became conscious of it.
Dorothy, I'm curious, of your friends from that tightly knit group, do they share your present?
Some do and some don't. Not many do. But there aren't too many of them left, Frieda. See, the girls with whom I grew up and whose parents were my parents' contemporaries, because we were all confirmed in one group. So you can imagine how close that group was. Only two remained in Pittsburgh. The rest all married out of town, including myself. I mean, that I came back is another story.
Right.
Of the people with whom I have since become very friendly, and took me a little while when I came back because my whole crowd was gone. Didn't take very long. But if that group... I would say today the ones that are the most snobbish are the ones that have no right to be. In any way. Either family background.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, you certainly are not going to print that because I could get my head taken off. You have to edit some of this. But either background or in intelligence. They have no right to be. Of course, nobody has any right to be. But the worst knob in the world is the person who is like a stork and stick your head in the sand. That's what a lot of these people do. They're the worst.
Dorothy, I don't really know who's related to whom well enough to know whether in the current council the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of the original founders...
Well, there's one.
Here's one, that's right. But for the record, I'll say it's Ellie Langer, since no one knows who's sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know the people. Has it carried through the generations?
I have to stop and think, Ellie, you think too.
We once had a party, a sort of three-generational party, didn't
mm-hmm.
we?
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number whose mothers and grandmothers had been active.
Yeah, of course, you could have a three-generation party in the past 10 years, and it wouldn't have any bearing on what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Because my family was four generations,
yeah,
see?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't mean anything.
It wouldn't be the same.
But I'm not, I guess I'm making odious comparisons, but this is only because I happen to feel very strongly about this.
Well, I think you've had a, you know, remarkably open point of view on many issues. You know, I've seen
well,
it change.
Well, and that's only because I think I saw what could happen when you didn't have an open mind. And it really was brought very forcibly to me when I was pretty young. Of course, I didn't get that from my father because he was not that kind of a person. He always believed in, well, as long as a person was a good person and a decent person, this person was worth talking to and being not necessarily an intimate friend, but at least to know them. On the other hand, my mother, God bless her, and I loved her, was entirely different from my father. Mm-hmm. She was brought up that the Benswangers were top bananas. And she never got over that. And that's what has made me, if I am different, has made me different. She never got over it. To this extent, that if we went somewhere, as we did very frequently, and there were a number of people, let's say, who were ahead of us, let's say we were going to a meeting or a lecture or something, and there were a number of people ahead of us, and this was before she was an old lady, she couldn't stand it if everybody didn't make way for Mrs. Hast and let her get in there. This is the only way that I can give you an example.
She took that as a prerogative of her position.
Yes. And I said when she died, I said it right away to Abe and to my brother. I said, my mother lived like a queen, and she died like a queen. Her whole life, she lived like a queen. And you know, that's a remarkable life.
There aren't many queens who are getting to live their whole life.
To live to be almost 97. And never, outside of my father's passing away when he was only 64, never to have had one reverse or reversal. You can't say that about many people. If she had any heartaches or whatever, and I'm sure she did because nobody can go through life without something, it was never evident, and it certainly was never from anything that any of us knew anything about. So I think that, you see, I could have. How shall
you could
I
have taken that mantle onto yourself.
That's right. I could have. But it was never. It really was just the reverse from everything that I always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, as an example, it worked in reverse.
Tell us now about some of the issues that were important to counsel. The reason I ask you that is I remember coming to one of the first meetings I attended, discussed some form of medical insurance, and the split on the board between those who were doctors' wives and others was very clear.
You never could do anything on the medical level.
Very bitter, as a matter of fact. We did later on. We supported Medicaid.
Yes,
against the medical.
Honey, it took a lot of doing that support of Medicare.
We'll talk about that.
Well, of course, there were things that went before that, though. Do you remember anything in Cecil Silverstein's regime? Well, there was a thing called, and I may have mentioned this before, called the League for Peace and Democracy. Now, I don't remember what year Steele was president. Was it in the late 30s or the early 40s?
The League for Peace and Democracy ultimately came out with a stand against the war, didn't they?
No, it was a strictly communist organization.
Oh.
And we were so beautifully taken in. And, of course, Steele... This was her, well, how shall I put it? She was definitely for peace as in opposition to anything else. I mean, she really, it's strange because what happened long afterwards was the way she felt it during her regime. And so when this organization was formed, the Peace for League and Democracy, she thought this was really great and right up her alley. Well, then one year there was questioning about some things to which we belonged.
Wait, before World War?
No, this was after World
this
War
This was during
I.
the car? Oh, this is after World War One. But how close to World War II?
Not there.
All right.
McCarthy wasn't
this
in
This is
the
not
picture.
A McCarthy.
No.
Okay.
And there was a question as to some organizations to which Council Pittsburgh section belonged. I don't remember the others. It may come to me. And so there was a motion in the board to investigate all of the organizations to which we belonged And in the investigation, it came out that the League for Peace and Democracy was simply a communist organization with a front that had fooled everybody. Well, of course, this made everybody feel that they had to be very wary from here on in as to what we joined.
They withdrew immediately.
Oh, sure, sure.
Now, it was definitely established that it was communist.
Oh,
this
yeah.
was not a guilt by association.
No. This was a communist front mm-hmm. organization. Mm-hmm. And we had belonged for some little time. Well, those things happen. I remember at the time of the formation of Israel, there was a hue and cry in that board. Don't you remember that?
I don't think I was active then. It was 1948. I could not have been active then.
There were a tremendous number of the board who were very much against creating a state of Israel. I among them.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have switched my allegiance more than I have, as you know. But again, this was the way. This was the makeup of the board. This was the way I was brought up and many, many other people on that board. And now I remember another name, Mrs. Oppenheimer, Mrs. Oscar Oppenheimer, and Mrs. Alfred Oppenheimer. They were on the early years of the board, too. Matter of fact, Mrs. Oscar Oppenheimer was the chairman of the Industrial League, not Mrs. Hugo Baum. She came later.
Later. Mm-hmm.
But
now, did council take a stand against Israel, or did they simply keep quiet?
No. I wouldn't swear to this, Frieda. So much has happened that mm-hmm. I can't remember mm-hmm. all these things. It seems to me they waited for the National to make a statement. I don't. Eventually. They voted to accept Israel as a state. But I don't think they did it right away, because there was a terrible hue and cry. Fine to leave it as a national homeland, but not as a state. And, of course, a great deal of this was because there were a number of people on that board, including Ruth Ellen Kaufman and Edna Oppenheimer and some of these other people who belonged to the American Council for Judaism. That's the kind of a board it was. Not everybody, but there were enough dissenters that they never could pass it at that time.
Pro. But they let it go for now.
I think they abided by the national stand, and at the moment, you'd have to look that up. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the national stand. But it was not, they didn't come out definitely for it, mm-hmm. because what was happening in Pittsburgh was happening all over the country.
Right.
Philadelphia, New York, Boston, everywhere. It took a long time for people to be willing to accept that. Because we had been brought up, and I'm sure Ellie was too, or her mother, brought up to feel that we're Jews.
But Americans.
But Americans first, and we have no allegiance to any other state. Right?
Well, basically, we still
are Americans.
Well, of course, we're still Americans, dear.
It's a different kind of feeling about Israel.
Entirely different feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Right.
I heard only the... Huh?
I'm hoping Ellie's can be heard on this.
Oh. I heard only the other day. Group. Tried a game, which has been in the States for about 40 years. I just bring this up as an example. I don't know if you read the letter that was published in the Carnegie Mellon Tartan about a month ago.
No.
The 22nd of January, not a month ago. Did you read?
I read the Tartan regularly, so I probably
did. A letter. Oh, if you read this, you wouldn't forget it. A letter. The like of which I have never read in my life, and I've seen many, condemning all Jews in this United States, calling them traitors, committing treason because they have sent a lot of money to Israel and are back to Israel. It was the most vindictive, vituperative thing I have ever read. So I read it out loud because I got it from Kitty Rutenberg upstairs before she went back to Israel. And I picked it up in my mailbox just before I was going out. And I was so full of it, I got there and I read this letter out loud. The first comment that was made after I read the letter was, if they would take that Israeli flag from the pulpit of Rod of Sholem, that might be a first step. Now, whether you agree that the flag should be there or not is beside the point. This was someone's first reaction. I stood there, was absolutely floored. I could feel my blood pressure, you know, going, which I didn't want to do. And then, what was the next statement? Something along the same lines. And I said, never mind, girls, let's not discuss it anymore. Then later, Louise Freund was there. And she turned around and she said, Dorothy and I have different opinions than many of you. It's better if we don't talk about it. And you know, Louise is not a shrinking violet. I mean, she will say whatever comes into her head. I don't want this in there either. Some of these things you're going to have to edit because I wouldn't bring other people like into a thing like this. Anyway, I wouldn't do this to my Friday game if such a thing ever came out in print. There's an awful lot in here that you're going to have to take out. You can do that, can't you?
Well, if Rosemary Wood could, I guess we can figure it out.
I think so. No, really, because I'm talking now completely off the cuff. And it isn't right to bring in other people.
No, it gives, what you're doing, however, is giving us the flavor of the original group.
That's right.
Of whom there are so few left, Dorothy. There aren't many spokesmen around who can, with any authority, say these things. Isn't that true, Ellie?
I must say that later, most of these women said that they thought it was perfectly dreadful. And since then, they have asked me, not the first two, they have asked me what was done about it. Now, I inquired, I made it my business to inquire. I understand that Saul Weisberg has the letter. I thought it should have been sent to the JCRC or to the Anti-Defamation League.
Then the JCRC was just discussing this last night in terms of the necessity for a public relations kind of program to go on with a lot of strength and resources to interpret Israel to the total community.
And then I heard that a group of Jewish students at Carnegie Mellon got together. Now, whether they printed a rebuttal, look for
it. I'm not sure. I'll have to figure out.
Look for it. Or whether they went to the board or what they did, I don't know. But I heard that they did take it up.
It would be interesting.
I'd like to really, Ellie, if you can find out what happened there, I'd really like to know.
And ask whether the faculty had any relation.
Yeah, I'd really like to know.
Any reaction? No? Okay.
Well, anyway, that's just, now, it's just an example of the reaction of some people.
And basically, Dorothy, the letter itself is an embodiment of the kind of fears the Jews had in this country that this might be the reaction
of
the total public.
That's right.
The only question about the letter being appeared in the tartan is, was it written sincerely or was it written tongue-in-cheek?
Well, no, this was no tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. I wish I had it to show you. I gave it to somebody else. It was signed by someone, I think his first name was John, his last name was Paul, P-A-U-L. Mm-hmm. And
a student?
Oh, must have been if he wrote it to the tartan. Wouldn't it have had to be a student?
Somebody, student or faculty, yeah.
I'd really like to know a little more about it, if I could find out about it. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that was the
Do you want to talk about the way our council's position changed on Medicare?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, when that first came up, all the doctors' wives or anyone connected with medicine in any shape or form objected strenuously on the basis of it being socialized medicine. Other than that, I know that it took a long time before it was finally passed. How long, I don't remember.
The opposition really was very clearly, though, from the doctor's wives.
Primarily. I remember Selma Sapira. Now, see, here's another name I wouldn't want to bring in there. It isn't right. Members of the board was really adamant on the subject. Her husband was a doctor. And she did sway a great many people. And I don't know how active she's been since.
She...
What did the council do for the immigrant population?
Well, the service to foreign-born was started practically at the inception of council, both the national and the locals. This was almost the foundation stone, I think, of the Council of Jewish Women. Because in the early years, they did a tremendous amount of dock work in the ports, and they met all these people coming off the boats, the immigrants. They found rooms and places for them to live. They found employment for them. They took care of them until they were on their feet. And that service went on for many, many years. After the First World War, it was still very, very active. And then as we got in to closer to the Second World War, in the 30s, the late 30s, when many of the Germans who were able to get out and came over, they were very active at that time, finding them, again, places to live, furniture, all kinds of things of that sort. And at that time, a club was formed by these German refugees called the Friendship Club.